Hey, today's show is brought to you by CBDMD. It's a brand new year, and hopefully if you're trying to turn over that new leaf like I am, get up, get a little more active. And at the same time, all that activity gives me some aches, gives me a couple of pains, and that's where CBDMD comes in. They're our good friends. I call them my good friends because they're helping me out right now, supporting me in conquering that New Year's resolution of getting myself going and becoming the best version of me, quite frankly. And you can do the same thing. If that's one of those resolutions that happens to involve fitness for you, they've got a brand new topical product that'll help you keep moving all year long. CBD Relief with lidocaine fuses CBDMD's hybrid broad-spectrum formula with fast-acting lidocaine to help provide temporary relief for those minor aches and pains. And with a new bag-o-valve spray technology, Relief can be applied comfortably at any angle, even upside down. So after I go on one of those long runs and I am literally panting on the floor upside down, I know that my bag-o-valve is going to get that done for me. You can, of course, make it even easier to get your year started off right. CBDMD is offering all our listeners 20% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that is CBDMD.com with promo code NBA for 20% off your purchase of the superior CBD products from CBDMD.
Oh, buddy, packed podcast here on the heels of an amazing win over the Nuggets. What are we talking about?
Just essentially how important I am to the success of the Brooklyn Nets and big close games like this when you need to come from behind.
Oh, Adam sent the text that changed the game, folks. That you'll hear about it here in a second. But if you're wondering why the Nets won, it wasn't KD's performance. It wasn't Joe Harris lighting threes. It wasn't defensive effort. It was that midway through the third quarter, Adam sent the text that sealed the Nets' fate with a win. You'll hear about it next. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team. It's every day. I'm Doug Norrie from DFSR, and that's Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster. Buddy, how's it going today?
Well, I tell you, man, when Steve Nash gave me the call at halftime, as he often does, and said, I got to pipe you in here. We got to turn this thing around. Same words that I said to you. Boy, that first half was brutal, gentlemen. And listen, the results bore themselves out over the final 24 minutes.
And something that couldn't have worked out any different, you sent me a text. I got to get the timestamp on this. Okay, so this is right around, I'm on my computer here, but it's like at 8:51, something like that. And you said, let me know if you want to record at 9, and this is somewhere in the third quarter. And I thought that, I actually went back and checked my phone to make sure that like I hadn't like screwed up the time or something like that, because it was so messed up. Because like the game's not over yet. And then I wrote back to you before the game over, I got to be at least 9:30. And you wrote, LOL, just kidding. This is just another rough watch. And from that minute on, do you want to calculate what the Nets what the Nets outscored the Nuggets by? Because it had to be, they must have outscored them by 22 or something like that. From that moment on, it really, you spoke it into existence. And you were I know you're joking about the Steve Nash calling you, but in reality, when it comes to the universe, I want to believe you were the catalyst for the Nets run, because sometimes making comments like that mid game, it's like the butterfly flaps its wings and a mile away, half the world away, a hurricane starts. I feel like that's what happened here with the text that you sent that ultimately leads to the Nets winning.
Yeah, ultimately. Listen, I know we're going to point to a lot of things. Kevin Durant, the big performance from Bruce Brown. But no, ultimately, I think it comes down to me. 36-20 in that third quarter. That was me, friends. So feel free.
Because what happens is I get the text and I hit and I use my thumbs, and then a little wind stirs up and it goes down and it goes down the street. And then, something hits your phone, and then you kind of get another little wind stirred up. And then you know, yada, 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 all that things happen, and then a bunch of three-pointers start dropping. That's just kind of how, again, this is how sports work. I don't know if people don't need, does anyone need a lesson in this? There's nothing else to know about this. This is how sports work. You say something, then the opposite happens. Anyway, the Nets are coming off an awesome win here against the Nuggets. In a game that actually played out in a lot of ways how I thought it would from the Nets side, except for the part where they just caught absolute flamethrower in the third quarter. We're going to get to the end of the game. We're going to start with the beginning of the game, obviously, get to the end of it. We'll talk some Kyrie Irving stuff as well. We have to, as this story just continues to, I mean, frankly, I'm actually surprised it's not a bigger story, but whatever. We'll get to it as we go. The Nets host the Nuggets here. They got the jersey throwbacks on. I love these uniforms. Even my wife kind of like walked in tonight. Again, never notices anything about anything with basketball. And the one thing she kind of stopped and said, "Huh, the blue uniforms, what are those about?" And then I explained it to her, and then, you know, she didn't care and then walked away. But she did at least notice them. So they got the jersey throwbacks on. They come out. They look pretty damn stiff for the first half. A lot of the problems that I think we talked about yesterday on the preview the podcast reared their ugly heads. They had a lot of time stopping Jokic. They really couldn't stop anything around the perimeter. Is that kind of what you were seeing from that first half? That it ultimately ends at 70-54 at the end of the first half, and looks like the game's pretty much getting away from them.
Yeah, 35 a quarter. That's how you draw it up defensively. I mean, listen, there's more just beyond it. But I did find it. It was interesting to watch, because at certain points you wondered how the matchup's going to work when you think about taking on Jokic. Durant picks him up defensively a couple of times there.
Yeah, no, you know, yeah, it was early. It was interesting. Yeah.
And so they go with that. And then also, though, Durant picks up a couple of quick fouls in those sequences as well. So it was a little bit tricky, because I think there are sequences where you go, oh, right, his length is always going to help him on the defensive end. But at a certain point, it's so weird, because Jokic is a guy who's just big enough to be able to muscle up against Durant, and then just athletic enough to be able to use those moves and that European style of his on a guy like Allen. So for all the checks and balances that the Nets tried to create, there still were some of as you said, the problems that we thought were going to get created basically showed themselves out there over the first two quarters. We can't even take the brief pause to note that in this starting five lineup here, they went with Bruce Brown gets himself injected back into the starting lineup, which I think makes a ton of sense in the absence of Kyrie. He represents arguably the best ball handler that you have now without Dinwiddie also. And then you get Harris back into the starting lineup, and Green gets inserted there instead of, or in rotation of, you know, a Taurean Prince piece, etc. We can even just go there as well. Did that make sense to you? Did that seem like the logical starting five to go with against maybe specifically the Denver Nuggets?
Well, yes, except we buried the lead where the Nuggets started Bulbul, right?
So it's like, I tell you what, if you want to make Durant look like he is bulked up, just have him standing out on the court next to Bulbul. Talk about a win getting created here. That guy gets blown through the crack in a wall. My God, is he... I mean, a tall drink of water doesn't even describe him correctly.
Well, the Nuggets did this when they ran...
Tall bag of feathers. I don't know.
Yeah, when they entered the bubble where they ran this, like, full center lineup. It was last year. It was the first game. They had nobody. And it was, like, Jokic, Bulbul, Jeremy Grant, and, like, I can't remember the other two players, but it was other two huge dudes. I'm doing a bad job remembering. But they went and did this lineup, and then I saw that what Bulbul was starting tonight, and I'm thinking... Well, because again, I'm doing minutes projections on these guys for my other stuff, and I'm like, God, Bulbul. And I actually nailed this pretty much. I was like, he's not going to play more than 20 minutes. I pretty much was correct about that. It was still such a weird thing to do. Like, I'm not exactly sure why they did it. It seemed like it sort of worked in a sense that he didn't kill them. Anyway, I just, you know, didn't want to just skip past that part, because he ends up effectively becoming a non-factor, but it's just such a weird sort of look to begin to throw out to them. I did like a lot of the defensive looks that they threw early. Like you said, they did the cross-matching stuff on Durant it's not cross-matching necessarily, but they did throw different looks at Jokic with KD on him at times where they weren't shy about getting the switch. We saw you see what happens when another center plays against Jokic in Jared Allen. The rebounding numbers just dip into oblivion because he plays so far away from the basket that it's just not going to happen, right? So he plays almost maybe a season high in minutes and only finishes with five rebounds. But ultimately, the first half was not great defensively, even for all those looks. It was still very easy for what
they were
getting.
Still 70 points.
It was still 70 points. Will Barton was basically hitting everything. He ends up going 6-for-8. That carried over into the second half, but it was really more in the first half. And it was just sort of problematic, right? This is the team that really spaces you. I actually think they probably did themselves a disservice by starting Bol Bol. It was like a weird thing that they probably just could have put the hammer down by not having those minutes out there, but whatever.
I almost thought that maybe, unless you want to go a layer deeper on it, but even, you know, I know Millsap is a part of their unit there, but if you're going to do a switch like that, if you're going to switch up your starting lineup, inserting Bol Bol as opposed to maybe getting smaller and quicker and, you know, spreading things out a little bit and being even more perimeter heavy, because that seems like that's something that's worked against the Nets early in this season.
Well, thought for sure it was going to be PJ Dozier. I thought, right, like 100%. That's why I projected the start when I knew that when I saw that Gary Harris was out, I was like, oh, Dozier's going to start and that's just going to be the end of it. I was actually still pretty confident that Dozier would play more minutes than Bol Bol, and I would end up being correct about that as well. He was pretty ineffective, all things considered. But it felt like a weird thing. But regardless, they get through the first half, and despite the Nets wanting to throw some different stuff at it, it just, nothing really looked like it was working, and it felt like we were just headed for another one of these games that... It wasn't even for lack of energy. I don't think it was that. I thought the effort was there. It just felt like they were sort of overmatched schematically early on. And that's what's going to happen when you play against a guy like Jokic, because Jokic will attack every single part of wherever you have a deficiency. This guy is going to understand where it is, right? If the deficiency is going to be that he's oversized in the block and can post you, then that's what you're going to get. If it's because you don't understand spacing and defensive, switching and movement, then he's going to get you there, right? He's an assassin. He'll pick you apart over and over and over again. And that's really what we got in the first half.
Yeah, for sure. And you combine that with 12 first half turnovers for the Nets. You can debate about if they were forced or giveaways. But that's been a theme of the Nets early in the season, too, getting familiar with teammates, with different rotations, different lineups, but just a lot of just straight, you know, balls going in the wrong direction, guys not cutting where you expect them to, and just some really sloppy play. So when you combine all of those things together, that's how you end up giving up 35 per quarter and find yourself down what was 16 points at halftime. And like I said, felt like, hey, maybe we go ahead and get some rest here for some guys and start trotting out some of the deep bench unit.
Yeah, that's sure what it felt like. We'll get into the second half here in a second. Got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. I looked at the line at Bet Online before this game started, Nets -1.5, and my eyes kind of went crossed. And I'm thinking, really? Maybe this is me not having enough faith in the team that I cover. But I thought that line looked a little sketch. What do I know? Because they covered that easily. So there you go. Nice job, BetOnline.ag. If you want to get into the action right now, we got a whole weekend of football coming up in the divisional round. We're through college football, but NHL starting tomorrow. You want to wet your whistle on a little hockey. They've got that up there as well. And obviously basketball every single night. Money lines, point spreads, player props, everything you want to get in on the action is up on betonline.ag. Go right now to betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network, and you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus. One of the best deals you'll find in the whole industry. NFL games of the week, and they have all the current headlines in sports as well. Don't sit on the sidelines, get in the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
And hey, it is officially 2021. That's right. 2020 is over, friends. We're moving into a bright new future, and that means that it's time for a fresh start with a few more wins. If you're betting this year and you want to get a couple more W's, listen to the Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They're picking the college basketball games, football, and of course, NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast wherever you get your podcast fulfilled. Second half kicks off. I mentioned the turnover piece of it. The Nets hold themselves to just 3 in that in that third quarter.
By the way, it's funny to say hold yourself. Like, yeah, like that's like me holding myself to only eating like 19 scoops of ice cream, right? So it's like, ooh, like I held myself. I really did a good job by only not having that third bowl of ice cream. I did a good job by not having that fourth beer tonight, right?
I really held myself. I could have held myself to only having 2 slices of the meat lover's pizza that I had for dinner tonight, but right, I didn't. I gave myself a third. So listen, kudos to the Nets for restraining themselves, but you're right. And again, the contrast of where you are in the first half with 12 and just this team in general, And those all came kind of late in the third quarter, by the way, too, where the Nets go on this big run. Everything starts activating for themselves. They got everybody shooting over 50%. You got Bruce Brown putting together a performance in the second half offensively, let alone, listen, you're understanding why this guy has defensive value on this team and in the league in general with his play in the second half, but the three turnovers come right at the back end of that third quarter. And that's right when things tighten back up again for the Nets. So, like, as soon as they got a little careless, all of a sudden you start to say, okay, for all that effort in the third quarter, winning it 36-20, turning the tides of this thing, tying it up, it actually was this little run here and a couple of turnovers that got Denver back even with you as you headed to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, so in that third quarter, they just sort of make a sort of miraculous – not a miraculous, that's probably overstating. They make an amazing run to pull themselves back into it, because they start off down by 16. They trade a bunch of blows at the beginning of it where they're kind of just, you know, scooting around trying to get it to just within single digits. And then they basically go on a run where it's a Harris three. KD gets a layup. The Harris hits another three. KD gets out in a transition dunk off of Bruce Brown's steal or a block or whatever. Not sure what it was. It was off something where Bruce Brown did something and then KD gets
Brown
out.
Just to be clear, Bruce Brown had three blocks in this game.
Yeah, well, he was all over the place. That one was on a three-pointer. That block was on a Barton three, so it wasn't even like at the rim. He was just absolutely everywhere. KD gets out on that and gets a dunk, and now it's a two-point game, and then Harris hits another three, and they have the lead, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, like, what just happened? It happened so quickly. And this is actually a funny thing about the NBA and probably the Nets and just sort of in general is that it's such a three-heavy league that – yeah, most times when you're down 15, you're going to lose. But if you're down 15 at this point in the game, there is time to go on these runs if you have absolute flamethrower shooters like the Nets have, right? So if you're going
to if you're lucky enough to be down so early by so many points, there's still so much time to come back, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's part of the strategy in a lot
of ways. That's like the old football thing. It's like, oh, they got sacked. It's like, nah, they have so much more room to operate now.
Right? Yeah. Right. So much more field to use, though, now.
One of those stupid comparisons that people use. Anyway, that I just did. But the sense that you're not going to be really out of it because, three possessions can be nine. You can do a 9-0 run in three possessions pretty easily. It's going to take a little bit of work, but that you can cut these deficits. But the key, I thought, before things tightened back up at the end of the third quarter was the run they went on really lit a spark for them on the defensive end. Because once they really started to believe here, and it's probably right around the point where they cut it to 12, I would say. KD hits a three to cut it to 10. That's about 8 minutes left. But you could see them. You could just see it was palpable on the defensive end where they were just there was so much energy around the defensive piece and when that happens, it actually did kick Denver out of its flow on offense because they were moving so much. They went to a little bit of a zone for a possession or two, but it threw them off so much in terms of what they were able to do offensively. But I hate to say that defense is just all effort because there is scheme definitely involved here in communication. But man, it's a big part of it, right? Like it's such a big part. And when you can just see it happening in the moment, that even the lay fan can see that, like, oh, okay, they've actually ramped this up to. And you can't do it all game because this isn't college basketball where you can just do this kind of like all game and, you know, whatever the game ends. But in the NBA, when you see it, it actually does make a difference for your eyes because it is actually rare to see all five guys operating at almost like a breakneck pace on defense.
Well, and by the way, because you really can't sustain it at both ends of the floor like that, right? So, that's the thing of picking your poison. Now there's a piece of it of our NBA players giving nearly the same level of effort on both ends of the floor for any given stretch, possibly not. And then the other thing is, too, because I'll throw, obviously, Bruce Brown, you throw in there, you throw in Taurean Prince. I think there's some world where this season, for all the ups and downs, what I'm realizing is he's closer to a Bruce Brown kind of guy, or that's what you should want him to be, as opposed to what we thought he was last year of this spot up 3-point shooter. No, I think this is a dude that gives you that maximum effort on the defensive end, can really be a problem for a lot of guys. And they did this effectively in this game, but you can't do that for 5-minute chunks every single quarter because inevitably you pick up fouls, right? Inevitably you get hit with a close one around the rim or a kickball here, an extra possession there. But when you get a team back on its heels defensively and you're knocking down the way the Nets are, Listen, it's a confidence thing, right? All of a sudden, now for whatever, you know, now Denver, from having 70 points in the first half, is starting to press offensively like they didn't just have that type of shooting performance to start this game. So it definitely swung the tide in it. I thought you were going to say, before I have a serious question, but I thought you were going to say the turning point is when Jared Allen just totally crunched up on Campanzaro's Wavancheros, to put it lightly.
Yeah, that guy, for him in that moment, that's a brutal one. That one looked like the old roll off the court and we'll deal with you later moment.
Well, can I just be clear here? Because I do have a serious question, but the fact that like you saw the guy go down, it's usually pretty clear when that's the injury. And then the Denver Nuggets went up. And listen, the irony about going up the court as a couple of Nuggets while your buddy is down on the floor like that. But they just went right on with the set. They were like, yeah, 4-on-5. It's fine. No. He's going to roll over eventually. Like, it was such an odd. Usually they go, yeah, time out, man. This guy needs an ice pack or something. They're like, no. We're good.
I did watch him. He kind of sat there, not incredulous. I think that at that point you're just fearing for your own life.
Yes. So my serious question, though, which is both about this game and then overall, Murray in this game shoots 9 of 20, 2 of 5 from beyond the arc, 20 point performance in 35 minutes. I'll throw Donovan Mitchell into this group as well, and you don't have to go into great detail if you don't want to, but isn't there an issue with these type of players? Because I feel like these guys fall into that same thing of, yeah, they'll light the world on fire, they'll also run incredibly cold, and I don't know. They are not the bad comp that he's not playing right now, but Kyrie Irving doesn't run cold as frequently as guys like these do. And it's just in some ways, when I watch them play, I go, geez, like, you know, they are the less fun watch for me. Guys like this and in this vein. And it seems like inconsistency, you get closer to a 9 of 20 performance than you do the line of a Jokic of 8 of 17. Is that?
This going into the, we said this in the preview. This is the Murray's thing. Like, Murray's not the guy that was in the bubble. Murray's the guy like tonight. This is Jamal Murray here.
I don't care for it, quite frankly.
He's a guy. He's going to be high volume on the nights where it's all going down. You're going to think he's the second coming of, you know, Steph Curry's, you know, love child with Klay Thompson, or you're going to get these really inconsistent shooting nights. He gets a lot of great look because Jokic gets him into it. He's a great player, so don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, but he's just not on the level of, actually, where he's not on the level of Kyrie too, which is clear, is overall shot creation. He's a high volume guy, but he doesn't have the ability to create the kind of shots that Kyrie is able to create for himself. Kyrie can create things out of nowhere, right? Like it's like David Blaine stuff. You're like, where'd that come from? Like, how'd the ball just end up going up over this, seven footer or something like that? Like, Jamal Murray doesn't have that in his arsenal, really. So what you're going to end up getting is, you know, volume 3-point shooting or this like sort of like volume-y mid-range or pick and roll stuff where he's able to get to the basket. And then that's where you're able to kind of clamp down on it to a certain degree. But sometimes with him, you don't even need the clamp because he just runs hot and cold.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's almost like, yeah, go ahead, because you're kind of going to take yourself in and out of the game. We don't have to necessarily overly focus on you. That's neither here nor there. I know we're going to get into the
Can I say one thing? Yeah. Can I say one thing where I felt very confident the Nets were going to win?
All right.
And I never feel like this. It was about midway through the third quarter when the Nets had gone on the run. They actually weren't winning yet, but they hit a shot that brought them, I should look now because I can see this probably. It brought them within, I think, two. No, I brought them within four. It was at 83-79 because I'm sure this is when they called the timeout because I made a note of it. And Jokic slammed the ball down after that when they called. Harris hits a three and it goes through and Jokic grabs the ball as it goes through the net. And I don't say the Nets and I was getting confused. It goes through and he grabs the ball and they call timeout and he just slams the ball into the. And I was like, oh, they're going to win this game. They're so frustrated. And I really never feel like that about momentum stuff because you usually just get proven wrong because the game's just long and stuff never, you know, if momentum or streaks were so predictive, then why do they end? Is what I usually say. Right.
Like, well,
it's just like streakiness is not predictive, but that was a moment where I thought, oh, they got something on these guys right now. There's something happening here that's maybe I'm not even picking up on, except for the lightning hot shooting. But there was clear frustration on the Nuggets. And I was like, oh, this is a real game here. I think they can win.
And it's ironic you mentioned Harris, because I was going to say my point when I knew they were going to win is when Harris took off that headband and just whipped it to the bench. He said, listen, I don't care what's going on up top. I got to be free. And the guy just started flowing.
No more average Joe. All right, we're going to get into some Kyrie stuff here because we got to talk about it before we close out. Have to talk to you about Built Bar, though. I know you. We just got some Built Bar in the mail here, and this stuff, it's always great to get the re-up on the Built Bar because good friends of the podcast, they make sure we have a taste, and it's one of those things where you make sure you have the taste because they know the stuff, the read is going to be even that much easier. So you get the Built Bar in the mail and you realize, oh my God, I just got some of the most delicious stuff ever and it's healthy for me. So absolute win, win, win. That's the ultimate negotiation you can do. Built Bar right now has all the great flavors. They have six new ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, plus the original ones like coconut almond, orange, toffee almond, coconut. And you get to the when you get to the actual details around the health stuff, you're just going to be floored when you actually realize what this stuff tastes like. 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. That's it. Perfect for the keto diet. Perfect for if you're just on the go and need something healthy to eat. Built Bar is just built for this stuff. Love these guys. Right now, if you go to builtbar.com, while supplies last, there's a free cooler with purchase. But you got to use the promo code LOCKEDON at builtbar.com and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
Oh, it's Wednesdays, friends, and that means that it's time for the small market to meet the big market. Wednesdays on the Locked On NBA podcast, you can join Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast and John Karolis of Locked On Celtics for a look at the NBA week from all angles. Subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast today, wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. Before we do get into the Kyrie piece, we do have to just give this obligatory nod because I feel like somehow we managed to blow past it. This is a game where Kevin Durant went 12 of 18, 4 of 7 from downtown, 9 rebounds, 13 assists. The turnovers were impressive. I'll give him that. Listen, the team had 18 and he had 7 of them. So good for him in that regard. He leads all categories. The guy, when he wants to pad the stats, he's going to do it across the board. But it was a really strong performance from him. And in a game, you know, with a roster and everything going on, would be easy for a guy like KD to kind of check out of that one. And he didn't. And, it, you know, he was obviously the catalyst for coming back there in the second half.
Yeah, it's everything you want out of a superstar. I don't really know what there's not going to be a lot of an analysis around this. You could have watched basketball for the first time in your life tonight and probably known that Kevin Durant was the one of the top two players in the court tonight. Right?
That crossover that he had for that throwdown jam was just, I mean, a thing of beauty.
And I'm going to tell you right now that any concerns about his health, which there are none at this point, we've said this before on the podcast, were actually just completely dispelled because it just came through right now as we're recording that KD's going to play the second half of the back-to-back against the Knicks tomorrow night.
Or splash on Wednesday.
So now whether that's a, hey, this is New York and it's an ESPN game, so maybe there's probably that could be part of it too. It's a nationally televised game, and there is sort of an edict from the league that says superstars really can't really be sitting these games. If you were going to sit somebody, if you were going to sit Kevin Durant, tonight would have been the night to sit him, right?
They sat DeAndre Jordan. They sat a superstar tonight.
In preparation. You know? We didn't talk about that. DeAndre doesn't even know. I mean, I talk about a monumental shift in what's happening here because, DeAndre goes from starting to not even playing. Nash talked about it in his post where he said, hey, he's got a good spirit around it. That's just what we needed tonight. And I got to say, good on Steve Nash for just going without him tonight and not feeling the siren song of DeAndre Jordan's whatever he does out there for a few minutes because that definitely helped part of that run. A lot of those minutes where they were going on that run is when DJ usually gets into the game on that rotation. And the fact that he didn't this time couldn't have hurt. I'm not saying it would have helped, but it definitely didn't hurt. So, just a final thing. KD is going to play against New York, which is awesome. And so any concerns you have about this guy's health between the performance and the minutes and the idea that he can just go back out and do it again, you just have a fully healthy superstar on your hands here, and that's just what he is.
Yeah, cash that check. And as Bruce Brown said in this post-game interview, that man is different. That was his description of Kevin Durant when asked that. Yeah, that man is different as he like smirked. And by the way, Bruce Brown had nothing but a big smile on his face as he was knocking down some of those buckets during the game as well.
And by the way, Bruce Brown getting to do the post, the highlight post-game interview has got to be that alone. That's a moment. He deserved it too. He played amazing. We didn't even really talk about it. There's so much to talk about here. We didn't talk about Bruce Brown too much, but he had Yeah, he had an awesome game. This is, again,
and knocked down big shots down the stretch. Like, it was key offensively as well.
Oh, yeah. He had one moment where he got into the lane and he hadn't even looked at the basket, and it was kind of, the shot clock was winding down, and he put up a little floater. And
yeah, the baseline opened up for him, yeah, right?
Exactly. It was really late in the fourth. Yeah.
And if you watch it, it was fucking, I remembered it in real time. After he makes that and he's running back, because this is when it is, you're giving the lead, you're keeping your team in the game there. He just has a grin on his face running back on defense. Like, he's just ear to ear, like, hey, like, I came over to this team. It looked like maybe I was never going to see the court, and then all of a sudden, here I am knocking down, a key shot to help win a game. So good for him. Yeah, there's so many things to talk about in this game that maybe we're not even going to get a chance to cover because of how fast these games come in the NBA season. But the DeAndre Jordan piece, I do think, is worth touching on, in the sense that if you go back to last year, and when it is, Kenny Atkinson at the helm, there was some clear understanding that, like, DeAndre Jordan is just, he's in this roster. He's in this rotation. You can't do anything about it. It doesn't matter if KD isn't here. It doesn't matter if Kyrie only plays 20 games. So, fundamentally, the organization, at least in bringing in Steve Nash and this new coaching staff, there's clearly some release of the reins, or there's some understanding that, hey, the proof is on the court, right? This guy is not whatever you think he was or what we hoped he was going to be, and it's okay. And it's okay to make this move very early in the season, because it's going to be to the benefit of us all, and then Kevin Durant can get that first-hand experience of it when you're winning a game like this.
And I think that the uncertainty and the weirdness of the season sort of lends itself to this idea that things are just going to be different this year, right? Yeah. I think that actually probably in some ways helps, because the season is so different and everything is sort of up for grabs at this point, that nothing, with no certainty around it, we're not dealing with, you coming in last year as the high price free agent, and this is just going to be, the plan. This is like, hey, look, we're like 5-6 whatever they were coming this game, 5-6 or whatever. And we just need to win. And that's just kind of our only goal at this point. So, or there, yeah, 5-6. So no one really wants to hear it. And it helps too when you win. And I don't think DeAndre's not even like this. I actually don't even think the pressure was really a lot of times from him. I think that he, by all accounts, is the consummate teammate, right? I don't think any of the pressure of having him play, he's not a brooding. It never felt like it was coming from him. It felt like it was sort of like an externality around, like, whatever his position was. All right, we're running long here, so I do want to talk about this Kyrie thing real quick. So some has happened here since we recorded yesterday, with the Kyrie Irving situation, around the video that surfaced that looked like him at a party for his sister. And the Nets talked about it but didn't talk about it. Sean Marks did release a statement that said, I should have brought this up, but it was essentially, Kyrie, we're aware of it. Kyrie will, let everyone know what's happening when he comes back. But it was saying things without saying things. I'll read it real quick.
Yeah,
While I was talking, I brought it up. We're aware of a video on social media featuring Kyrie Irving at a family gathering. We are reviewing the circumstances with both Kyrie and the NBA in order to determine compliance with health and safety protocols. Kyrie remains away from the team due to personal reasons. A date of his return has yet to be finalized. In the meantime, we will continue to stay focused on our organizational goals. Kyrie will have the opportunity to address his absence when he is ready to do so. Two things I took from this were, it's not really a, this was not, this this did not really, to me, come out in support of Kyrie Irving, I don't think.
No.
If we're choosing our words carefully camp, I think these words were carefully chosen to not really support what's happening here, while also not denigrating it at all either. So I don't know if you just take that political line because you're just the GM and Sean Marks has been, a pretty emotionless dude around this stuff. Personally, for me, my thoughts really aren't changed, but I don't know. Do you have any quick thoughts about the Kyrie Irving situation here?
No, other than to say that there is clearly some level of concern or issue within the organization around what's happening with Kyrie. And that is at least a minor development, in the sense of, as we said, as everyone says, right, this is what you sign up for with superstars, whatever that thing is, whatever it is that you signed up for, it's going to be something, but this seems different than that. And whether it was just the understanding, you can be your own cat, you can be your own guy, but the communication piece of it, the conversation with us internally, that has to exist. That has to always be something that we have between us, and then we'll deal with everything else. And this at least feels like the organization, he said, Steve Nash as well. The comments aren't, they're not biting at Kyrie, but they're also not a blind defense of him. So right. there's something there, and we'll just have to see what comes, you know, over the next handful of days. And now, if in fact it ends up being a protocol issue, he won't be able to come back even if he wanted to for now an extended period of time. And I think they said the rest of this week, at the very least, he wouldn't come back even if he was returning to the team.
Anthony Puccio, just like Nets OG Twitter, covering the Nets daily forever, just really, really dialed in, dude. He tweeted earlier something to the effect of that this stuff is kind of wearing thin when it comes to the organization, that they are not really, they're not really into what's happening here. So, I gotta trust Pooch that he knows what he's talking about, because I think he does. This guy knows a lot of people in the organization. Again, he's a really connected guy, and he's not going to source that kind of thing in terms of like who he talked to, obviously. But if he's saying it, he's hearing at least from certain people that whatever's happening. My other thing that I would say is about the Kyrie thing is, my guess is there was probably a decent amount of support until that video hits, and now we got to answer a million questions about it, right? Like, yeah. I have a feeling that, I mean, don't even have a feeling. You don't need to be freaking Sherlock Holmes to figure this out.
Maybe more than a feeling.
Yeah, but the part where it's this sort of quiet thing where we're actually somehow not getting raked over the media coals for it, and he hasn't played, but it actually really hasn't become a huge story because so many other guys in the NBA are sitting out with COVID that it's just not weird to sit out at this point. I think it was sort of under the radar, and I'm wondering if the video, even if the organization felt like it was innocent, it just puts them in such a bind that they kind of avoided with this really weird situation, and all of a sudden just could no longer avoid it. So I actually wonder if that just ramped up the timeline on what is going on here, and it's just not going to go away anymore, because if he decided to come back tomorrow, like you said, he couldn't play for a few days probably anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. So, I mean, listen, it's evolving, and I feel pretty comfortable with the way we treat it, just in terms of as information comes out and as it feels it's getting more and more concrete about what that information is, I'll respond and react to it. But, as I've seen on Twitter, people are ready to take that turn, right? The Twitter sphere is ready to turn on Kyrie, and it's as relative as it was when this started to where it is now, even with everything else. Like, it's all up for debate until you hear the real factual information, whatever that looks like. But it certainly
I stand pretty firm on what I said originally. I think this guy's, I think he's just got a lot going on in his head, man. And I think that's what it is. And I don't feel bad for him, because I rarely ever feel bad for anyone, because I just don't spend my time doing that. But I think about the situation a lot, and I'm thinking, like, this, seeing him at that party did not change my opinion of it at all. Because I actually still felt like my original context was correct.
Yeah, I think that's my, maybe that's my point. I know we're getting away from this here, so we'll cut it out. But yeah. My opinion of him, I think, has been affirmed by what seems to have been going on. It doesn't make me judge him any more harshly. And I think the thought that I had about it was, I'll never judge Kyrie as a human being, because he can't get inside an individual's head and know what they're feeling or experiencing. But I can now start to judge him as a basketball player, an employee, a teammate, right? Those things I can start to place a little bit of judgment on. And I think that's where our conversation started on all this. And to your point, I feel pretty much the same way that I did then that I do now. And maybe fans are now getting on that ride of what it is to be upset if it's going to cost you wins and losses, which, by the way, is the relatively irrelevant piece of this story.
100%. Right. In the end, that will be the part that matters the least. And sometimes it's hard to have that removed from the conversation. All right. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about this as the days and weeks go on. In the end, we get an awesome Nets win here over the Nuggets. Going to be back again tomorrow following a Knicks game for the first time this year, which would be really, really exciting. That's going to be a national game, so we're going to be able to jump right on after the game and talk about whatever happened when they face the Knicks. In the meantime, go over and rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Hit 5 stars, write a little review. We much appreciate whenever we see those come in. It really does help the numbers a lot. Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
When I'm tired and thinking cold, I hide in my music, forget the day, and dream of a girl I used to know. I closed my eyes and she slipped away. It's more than a feeling. Brad Delp.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.